The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk New York on WGBB here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue here with you on this 14th day of December 2025. As always, on this snowy night on Long Island, our engineer Brian Graves is with us. Glad to have you aboard with us tonight. Second to last show of the year. We got great one lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome the author of a new book on the amazing Los Angeles Dodger draft class of 1968. That class included many players. They went on to play in the big league, so we'll talk about that. Eric Vickery, the author, will join us. In the second half, we will speak to a member of that draft class, former big leaguer, former Met, former Mariner, former White Sox. Tom Pachorik will join us. So there you have it. Some great chat up ahead on Sports Talk New York tonight. And as I said, it's a pleasure to be with you guys tonight. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow me on my Facebook page. It's called The Talk of New York Sports. So much out there. Pictures, information, funny stuff. You can stop by and give it a look. You can follow me on X at B Donahue WGBB, all one word. And all past shows, if you miss one, don't you worry, because they're out on the website at www.sportstalknewyork.com. You can review your favorites, go back to find shows you missed anytime you want. Well, our first guest, he's written dozens of articles as a member of SABRE, which, of course, you guys know is the Society for American Baseball Research. He's the author of three books: Runnin' Redbirds, the World Champion 1982 St. Louis Cardinals, Casey Award finalist, The Season of Shattered Dreams, Postwar Baseball and the Spokane Indians, and A Tragic Bus Crash That Changed Everything. Great book, folks. That's the last time Eric was on the show. We discussed that fine book. And this one tonight, Before They Wore Dodger Blue, Tommy Lasorda and the Greatest Draft Class in Baseball History. That's the year the Dodgers drafted six future All-Stars, guys like Doyle Alexander, Bill Buckner, Ron Say, Steve Garvey, Davey Lopes, and, of course, Tom Pachorik. They were selected for a combined 23 All-Star games. Then you had guys like Joe Ferguson, Bobby Valentine, Jeff Zahn. And most of these draftees, they were joined at various stops by guys like Tommy Hutton, Charlie Huff, and, of course, the great shortstop Bill Russell. So I'm happy to welcome to the show tonight Eric Vickery. Eric, good evening.
Hey, Bill. Great to be with you again.
Great to have you with us, Eric, on this snowy evening here. Now, who are your teams today, Eric?
Who are the teams I root for?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I grew up in St. Louis, so I'm kind of a lifelong St. Louis Cardinals fan. But now I live in Washington State and have for the past 11 years, so I've become more of a Mariners fan. And, of course, this past season was very exciting here in the Pacific Northwest. So I kind of have two teams that I root for.
Gotcha. Okay, now, who were your stars when you were a kid? Who were your boys?
Well, I grew up watching those 1980s Cardinals under Whitey Herzog, those teams that stole 200, 300 bases. So Ozzie Smith, Willie McGee, Vince Coleman, those are my kind of heroes growing up.
I understand. Okay, now, what made you, Eric, decide to write this particular book now?
Well, you know, I've been toying with the idea of writing something about the 1970s Spokane Indians for a while. I had learned about that team while I was researching my last book, and you mentioned all those players that came out of the 68 draft, and then a few others from the 66 draft. They all came together in 1970 and played in Spokane under Tommy Lasorda. So I was really kind of intrigued by just how much talent was on that AAA team. And as I kind of took a step back and looked at the overall picture, I realized that it was really a transformative time in the Dodgers' history. They went from kind of a pitching-heavy team with Koufax and Drysdale and really reshaped the direction of the franchise with that 68 draft. So as I kind of gathered all this information, the book kind of started coming together, and I thought it would be a really cool project to pursue.
Understood. Okay, now, the Brooklyn / L.A. Dodgers, they were always groundbreakers on the player development front, weren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Going back to the 1940s, you know, under Branch Rickey, when he, of course, integrated the game, signing guys like Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella, and then, you know, Branch Rickey was sort of the father of the minor league system, and he installed a robust minor league system with the Dodgers and signed guys in the 50s like Sandy Koufax and Roberto Clemente, who later went to the Pirates in the Rule 5 draft, later Don Drysdale, Don Sutton, Maury Wills. They had a really rich history of signing and developing players since the late 40s, and that really propelled them to a great success in the 50s and early 60s.
Right. Now, the draft class put together one of the most stable and talented infields in baseball history. It really was.
Absolutely, yeah. Those three of the players that formed the infield that played together for 8.5 seasons. Mm-hmm. So they had Ron Say at third, Bill Russell at shortstop, Davey Lopes at second, and Steve Garvey at first. Those players played together for unprecedented 8 seasons in a row, and of course three of those guys came from the 68 draft.
Now, we're speaking with Eric Vickery tonight on Sports Talk New York. You spoke about, Eric, the 1970 Spokane Indians, managed by Tommy Lasorda. They were really one of the most talented minor league teams in history.
Absolutely, yeah. If you look at how long each of those players went on to play in the major leagues, you know, most of them played for at least a decade in the big leagues. And then you had a guy like Charlie Huff, who is one of 10 players in big league history to play 25 seasons in the major leagues.
Wow.
So it really was a juggernaut in 1970 in Spokane. There was another really talented team in that league that year, the Hawaii Islanders, which was a kind of a co-op team, AAA affiliate of the California Angels. So you had these two really, really good teams, and they ended up matching up against one another in the league championship that year. Of course, Spokane swept the series and won the championship.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you researched how the draft was put together, Eric, tell us some of the people that you spoke with doing your research.
Yeah, so I kind of went back to when Major League Baseball instituted the draft in 1965. I was just kind of interested in how that came to be, how the league decided to go from the previous system was basically like a free-for-all prior to that. There was of course, the bonus baby era, as they called it. But then in 65, they instituted the draft to kind of level the playing field. So I talked to Pat Gillick and Joe McDonald, who were a couple of executives who were actually at that first inaugural draft in 65. So just hearing stories from those guys describing how the draft went down that day. It was very new for everybody, so they were kind of learning on the fly. So that was a lot of fun talking to those guys who have some very vivid memories of that that time from 65.
Yeah, Pat Gillick, Hall of Famer, associated with the Phillies and the Blue Jays, and, of course, Joe McDonald traded Tom Seaver from the New York Mets. And he's renowned or vilified around here for that, Eric. But I want to mention, we've spoken about Tommy Lasorda. Now, people may view the man as just like the fun-loving baseball ambassador. But he really followed these guys as their skipper through the stops, the different stops in the Dodger farm system. And this was key in him being named as the successor to the great Walter Alston. To put it plainly, his baseball acumen was overshadowed by his persona, correct?
I would definitely say so. That's a very accurate way to describe it. Lasorda was definitely a character. You know, we all kind of remember him from fights with mascots and
one of my favorites. You know, yeah,
tussling with the Philly fanatic and getting the Expos mascot ejected, and of course his Slim Fast commercials from the 80s. He really was a brilliant baseball mind. Going back to the 1960s when he began scouting in the early part of the decade, and then was named a rookie league manager in the Dodgers system in '65. Spent 4 years doing that, and then was promoted to AAA in '69 up to Spokane. And so, yeah, he managed a lot of these guys as they were coming up, and of course, later was promoted up to the big leagues along with all these guys that he had sort of fostered and mentored in the minor leagues.
Eric Vickery, before they wore Dodger blue, with us tonight, Sports Talk New York. Now, another key guy in this draft that people, of course, around here recognize, a local guy, Bobby Valentine. You spoke to him to get not only his opinion on Tommy Lasorda, but on the draft in general. Now, Bobby, people may not realize, he was looked as kind of like a can't-miss.
Absolutely, yeah. He was the Dodgers' first-round pick that year, taken fifth overall, and was one of the top baseball prospects in the country, and was definitely the most highly touted prospect in that class, the class that included guys like Steve Garvey, Davey Lopes, Ron Say, you know, borderline Hall of Famers. And Bobby Valentine was, many predicted that he would have a Hall of Fame career. Of course, he later dealt with injuries that kind of derailed his career. But Bobby actually was highly recruited by USC. He was going to play football there. He was a star running back in high school in Connecticut, and was going to take over for O.J. Simpson was the plan. But then the Dodgers took him in the first round, offered him a contract that convinced him to sign. And so he signed right out of high school and went to Ogden, Utah to play for Tommy Lasorda.
There you go, folks. Bobby V looking to succeed the juice out there at USC. Very, very, very interesting, Eric. Yeah. Now, another great point that you brought out that I really enjoyed delving into a little bit, that in preparation for this draft, Al Campanis looked to a football executive for drafting advice. Tell us about that, Eric.
That's right. Yeah, the Dodgers, this was the fourth year of the draft in '68, and the first few years didn't really go too well. They got lucky with a couple of sleepers in '66 with Charlie Hough and Bill Russell, who would later, you know, have long careers. But they didn't get much production out of the inaugural '65 draft, and '67 just produced a couple guys like Steve Yeager and Von Joshua, but no really impact offensive players. So they kind of went to the '68 draft looking to sort of reshape their philosophy. So Al Campanis reached out to a guy named Al Locasal, who was a football executive who had been running drafts for the Chargers and then the Bengals. So he had a lot of experience drafting. So Al Campanis reached out to Adela Casal, and he gave him some advice on how to rethink about taking the top athletes rather than drafting per position need. And kind of they developed a system of ranking players based on different attributes. So based on this information, this kind of new system they installed, and then really putting emphasis on drafting position players is how the Dodgers kind of really pulled off this legendary haul that year.
Interesting. Very interesting point, Eric. Now, people may wonder, we're backpedaling a little bit, why did baseball go to an amateur draft in 1965?
Yeah, so the 60s, even going back to the 50s, there were rising bonuses given out to players. It was really there was no structure to it. Teams could offer bonuses as high as they wanted to attract players. And in '64, the Angels signed a guy named Rick Reichert for $205,000, mm-hmm. which, you know, doesn't sound like much today, but this was $30,000 more than the previous high bonus. And at that point, the owners felt that things were really getting out of control, and so they instituted the draft to kind of level the playing field and it really didn't work. It suppressed signing bonuses and kind of gave teams an equal footing. Before that, other teams like the Angels and Yankees and Dodgers, teams with kind of deeper pockets had a upper hand at acquiring talent. So the draft was meant to kind of level the playing field and give the smaller market teams a better chance at acquiring talent.
Rick Reichert, a Facebook friend of mine, a very solid major league career with the Angels, the Washington Senators, a real nice man, lives down in Gainesville, Florida. Rick Reichert, folks, you can Google him. Now, do we know any others who might have been on the Dodgers' radar, Eric? What other players would we know who were drafted in 1968?
Yeah, so I mentioned Bobby Valentine taken first overall.
Mm-hmm.
They also had their eye on Greg Luzinski that year, but ultimately decided to go with their second-ranked player, Bill Buckner, in the second round.
Can't go wrong there,
right? Yeah, Bill Buckner.
No.
More than 27 hits in his career.
Yeah. As I use the word again, vilified in Boston for a while for the 1986 World Series that we're very familiar with around here. But as you said, Eric, 2,700 major league hits. Don't think he struck out more than two times in a game in his career, a stat like that. Put the ball in play, and before he was hurt, a great fielder too, Billy B., just a tremendous ball player. I don't think they would have gone wrong with the Bull either, with Greg Luzinski, a very stellar career with the Phillies and the White Sox, hit for power. As I said, a great man with the bat, hit the long ball very, very well. Now, one other thing I wanted to check on, Eric, was some of the players in that 68 Dodger class were used as kind of trade chips to bring back guys. Who was traded, and what did they bring back?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that draft, a few of those players went on to play with the Dodgers for a long time. Of course, Lopes, Garvey, and Ron Say, namely. But guys like Jeff Zahn, he was traded to the Cubs for Bert Hooten, who became a mainstay in the rotation in the late 70s. Buckner was traded to the Cubs for Rick Monday,
right,
which became a playoff hero for the Dodgers.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Eric.
Well, I was going to say that, yeah, Lasorda had actually tried to sign Rick Monday when he was a scout back in 64. So the Dodgers finally acquired him, more than a decade later.
Rick Mundy, folks, famous for saving the American flag in Chicago when two less than gentlemen tried to burn Old Glory out in center field. Rick Mundy came along, swooped in, took the American flag from them, and saved it from being desecrated. You can Google Rick Mundy. Very good major league career as well. I also read Eric Vickery with us tonight. Before They Wore Dodger Blue is the name of his book. They brought in Frank Robinson, Hall of Famer Frank Robinson, to the Dodgers. People may not know that.
Yeah, that's right. They traded Doyle Alexander and a really young pitcher named Bob O'Brien to the Orioles for Frank Robinson. And he was a little bit later in his career that year, so only played one season with the Dodgers. But then the Dodgers actually flipped Frank Robinson to the Angels, along with Bobby Valentine, for Andy Mathersmith, who became ace in the Dodgers and started Game 1 of the World Series in 74.
And I think our buddy Tom Pachorek went to Atlanta for Dusty Baker?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Pachorek, a star football player at the University of Houston. That's another thing. A lot of these guys from the 68 draft, they were, a lot of them, two-sport stars. I mentioned Valentine in high school, star running back. Tom Pachorek was actually drafted by the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
I'm sure you can get into later when you talk to him. He's a fun guy to chat with.
I found out about his illustrious career. Excuse me, Eric. Talk a little bit about Pachorik for the people to whet their appetite for Tom coming up. What did you find out about the great Tom Pachorik through your research for the book, Eric?
Well, Tom, you know, what really stands out to me from just talking with him is how funny he is. He has a really dry sense of humor. So I really enjoyed my conversations with Tom. And he does a great Vin Scully impersonation. So I would encourage you to, if you can get him to do that, that'd be a lot of fun.
Sounds good, yeah. As we said, folks, go ahead, Eric. Again, I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, Tom came out of the Detroit area and then went to college at the University of Houston, really joined the baseball team there because to get out of spring football practice, and ended up becoming a star baseball player and was taken in the fifth round of the 68 draft.
Yeah, drafted, folks, also by the Miami Dolphins in what was then an AFL-NFL draft, and we'll talk more to Tom Pachorik about that. I want to ask him about his wonderful nickname, and we have to talk to him about his promotions that he did for the Seattle Mariners. I don't know if you've ever heard about that, Eric, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's done some legendary promotional work for the Seattle Mariners out there. And, of course, his work with the Hall of Fame broadcaster Ken the Hawk Harrelson in Chicago. So he's really a local legend in Chicago, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. And Tom is really a legend, I would say, in many fan bases. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still well-loved out here in Seattle. Did some work with the broadcast and, of course, came up with the Dodgers and was a really good pinch hitter for them for a few years. He kind of got blocked. He really didn't have a path to the starting lineup, so they finally traded him where he can get some regular playing time in Atlanta for Dusty Baker. But, yeah, a really, really solid career both as a player and a broadcaster.
Yeah, I found out he hit .282 for his career. Not too shabby.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, what was your favorite part about putting this great book together, Eric?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I interviewed about 70 people for the book. And, you know, a lot of them were, you know, some of them are names everyone recognized, guys like Bobby Valentine and Charlie Huff and Tom Pachorik. But I also interviewed a lot of guys who played with these guys in the minor leagues or who played for Tommy Lasorda. Even guys like the Bat Boy and Clubhouse Boy for those teams. They had some really fun stories to share about Lasorda and those 1970 Spokane Indians coming up and kind of seeing all these guys rising through the minor league. So it's a lot of fun stories, just talking to people and of course, kind of piecing it all together for the book is a lot of fun.
Give us an example, Eric, if you would, of one Tommy Lasorda story from one of the clubbies.
Oh, gosh. There are so many. Off the top of my head, you know, Lasorda was a really, really big motivator. He was always looking for ways to kind of motivate his players. And one of the Bat Boys that summer in 70 broke his arm, but continued to come to work in a cast and was, you know, doing his Bat Boy duties with one arm, basically. And the Spokane Indians were losing one day, and Lasorda kind of got on his players and said, you know, look at this guy. He's working with one arm, and he's doing his job with one arm, you guys can go out and win a game with two arms. So that, he was always looking for ways to kind of motivate his team and was using, you know, using any ounce of motivation he could find.
I remember talking with, I've had Tommy on the show, Eric, and I remember him talking about, I asked him about sitting on the stage in Cooperstown there while everybody gave their speeches, and he was not a big fan of that. Not at all. They're all sitting there with their sunglasses on. Half of them are probably asleep when they're up on the stage. And I remember John Smoltz was inducted that summer that I was talking to Tommy about. And as we know, John on the television broadcasts can be a bit verbose at times. Let's just put it that way. And I asked him, I said, Tommy, Smoltzy talk a little long, you think?
I think so. You know, he gave it in his inimitable voice, and just a funny, funny man.
And as we stressed earlier, folks, his baseball acumen really hidden by his persona as a showman, as an ambassador to baseball, as talking about Dave Kingman and Kurt Bavacqua. If you can, if you want to go Google Dave Kingman and Tommy Lasorda and Kurt Bavacqua and Tommy Lasorda, you'll be entertained by that. And we see pictures of Tommy with Frank Sinatra, with Farrah Fawcett. The list is endless being out there in L.A. But a great baseball mind that Eric was able to uncover in his book, Before They Wore Dodger Blue, which is available on Amazon right now. Any upcoming projects coming up for you, Eric? Any books, any plans with Sabre, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm actually co-editing a book on the 2001 Mariners for Sabre. So that's an effort with about 50 different Sabre members writing articles. So those have been kind of trickling in over the last several months, so working on kind of doing some editing on those. And then this book that we're talking about, Before They Wore Dodger Blue, just came out a week ago. So I'm just trying to get the word out about that and kind of spread the word in any way I can.
Yeah, sounds good. And any signings in the Pacific Northwest? We have folks listening all over the country because we're on the TuneIn app, and we can be reached anywhere on the planet. Any activity up there in the Pacific Northwest where you'll be or out on the coast where you'll be signing the book or doing any promotions?
Yeah, so actually I just agreed to do a talk at the Los Angeles Public Library main branch on April 11th, so right after opening day, and I'll be signing books along with another author, Steve Ditmore, who wrote a really good biography about Jim Gilliam, another Dodgers player.
Yeah, I've had Steve on the show to talk Jim Gilliam. Yeah, very good book, very entertaining, and a subject that's very unsung and not talked about a lot, Junior Gilliam. Check that book out, folks. If you missed the show on that, you can find it in the show archives. Well, Eric Victory, Vickery. Well, we can call you Eric Victory too, because you really hit the target on this book. It's been a pleasure. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night during this holiday season to spend it with us here at Sports Talk New York. The book again, folks. It's available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Eric.
It is, yeah, barnesandnoble.com. Some select bookstores may carry it, or they can order it if you request it.
Gotcha. Okay, again, folks, it's called Before They Wore Dodger Blue, Tommy Lasorda, and the Greatest Draft in Baseball History. We wish you the best of luck with the book, Eric.
Same to you, Bill. I really appreciate it, and enjoy the conversation with Wimpy.
I will. Great holiday season to you and the family as well.
All right, likewise. Take care.
That's Eric Vickery, ladies and gentlemen. Up next on Sports Talk New York, we will welcome in a former major leaguer and a member of that great draft class of 1968, Tom Pachorek. Stick around, folks.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
All right, folks, we are back with Sports Talk New York on WGBB AM/FM radio live from beautiful downtown Merrick, Long Island, New York. Snowy beautiful downtown Merrick, Long Island, New York, USA. I'd like to wish a happy Hanukkah to my Jewish friends out there. Happy Kwanzaa to those celebrating. And a very Merry Christmas to those observing that holiday as well. Happy holiday season to all out there. Let's put it that way. And if I might be permitted to be Dickensian, God bless us, everyone. How's that? You like that, Brian?
Yeah.
All right. Well, as a Mets fan, this was one of the worst weeks since the Midnight Massacre in 1977 when we saw Tom Seaver go to the Reds, Dave Kingman go to the Padres. Bad week, and they weren't even playing. How's that? Edwin Diaz goes to the Dodgers, then another fan favorite. One of the most popular Mets of all time is allowed to sign with the Orioles without even an offer being rendered to the guy. To me, it shows the ownership has no regard for the fans. He's got his kingdom going up next to Citi Field. His old toy, the Mets, take a back seat. They're old news like a broken toy. I realize this is not the same game that I grew up with. The times and the games have changed. It's all about the money. It's business. But to me, this still hurts. To me, it's a game. It's the game. And with those feelings, I set myself up for disappointment. Just like trading Seaver, this wound, it'll heal too. But when you get my age, you don't heal as well as you did when you were 20 years old. So I'll say that. I know now not to expect too much anymore from these guys, which is why I like to talk about and relive the old days. And that's just what we're going to do right now. Our next guest was an outfielder, first baseman for 18 seasons in Major League Baseball, 282 lifetime hitter. Member of the legendary Dodger draft class of 1968 that we spent the first half of the program discussing. He played in the postseason twice with the Dodgers in 74, with the White Sox in 83. And we remember, of course, in 1985, he played for the Mets. And then when his playing days were over, he worked as a color commentator for various clubs, most notably with the White Sox, who he teamed with Hall of Famer Ken Harrelson. Throughout the 90s, I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Tom Pachorek. Tom, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. Boy, you really do your homework.
Yeah, I try. I try, Tom.
I'm sorry, yeah, that was impressive, all the accolades. Some of those big words you were throwing at it left me.
I did well on the SATs, Tom. Yeah, so I got high marks in vocabulary. So
I didn't.
I tend to show that to people, and that's about the best thing about me. So that's all I can do.
I'll tell you what I did one time, Bill. I brought my report card home to my dad and showed it to him in high school, and I had four Fs and a D.
Nice.
And he told me I was concentrating too much on one subject.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, man, that's a good
one. I'm not going to get in the war of words with you tonight. How about that?
Yes, sounds good. Now, you grew up in Michigan, Tom. Who were your favorite teams and sports heroes when you were a kid?
Good. Well, my number one idol was Al Kaline growing up in Detroit. He was, he got to the big leagues at such an early age. He was like 18 years old, and he won a batting title, I think, at 19. And I got to know Al a little bit through my years of broadcasting with the White Sox. Mm-hmm. We played the Tigers a lot, and God rest his soul. What a great gentleman, and what a great loss for the game of baseball.
Mr. Tiger.
Yeah. And, of course, I like the Lions and the Pistons and the Red Wings and people like that. But we didn't get around too much. And I went to school in a little Catholic high school in Hamtramck, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
My one claim to fame, I guess, we won the Pony League World Series in Washington, Pennsylvania, which is the next step after the Little League World Series in Williamsport.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we got something else in common, Tom. Catholic high school. I went to Catholic school for 12 years.
I didn't wear jeans to class until college.
And I went to St. Ladislaus. What was your school's name?
St. John the Baptist.
How's that? Oh, okay.
Yeah. People think I'm a Baptist, but no, I said, that's the dude who baptized Jesus. Come on, get with it.
That's about as Catholic as you can get.
That's it, yeah. Now, you played football and baseball, Tom, at the University of Houston. You were a Cougar, defensive back. People may not realize, as we spoke about in the first half, drafted in the ninth round, 240th overall. It was the 1968 NFL-AFL draft, folks, by the Miami Dolphins. And you also played in the finals of the 67 College World Series. So you pretty much covered all your bases there.
Well, it was fun. It was funny. Coach Bill Yeoman was our coach at the University of Houston, our football coach, and my scholarship was for football. And he said that if you could start on the baseball team, then you didn't have to go through spring practice.
Oh.
And so we took a team of football players, and we got to the College World Series and finished second to an outstanding Arizona State team, which was, we'd have won that thing. That would have been the biggest upset since David and Goliath.
Yeah, wow. That's something, Tom. Now, you were selected by the Dodgers, fifth round, 89th overall, 68 draft, as we said. One of eight players drafted by L.A. to reach the majors. Why did you choose baseball over football?
Well, it's interesting, Bill, because my senior year of football, I got hurt and I missed three games. And I think that I might have been able to get drafted a little lower or with a little bit more stature, but I was plagued with injuries my senior year, and thank God I didn't sign that contract with the Dolphins, because they gave me an offer I could refuse, first of all, and as bad as I feel right now at age 79, I can't even imagine what 10 or 12 years of pro football could have done to me.
Some of the guys that I have on the show, Tom, they're not doing too well because of playing football for a lot of years. So, yeah, I think you made the right choice. Now, talking about that draft, Tom, how was it playing in the Dodgers organization back in those days?
Well, it was really interesting. We were fundamentally really sound. And, and you talk about that 68 draft, Bill, the number one pick, our number one pick was Bobby Valentine.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you guys in New York are familiar with Bobby.
Yes,
and
sir.
Steve Garvey was also in the first round. Billy Buckner, Ron Say, Joe Ferguson, a pitcher named Sandy Vance, who would have had a great career had he not hurt his arm. But the one thing that struck me about the Dodgers is we would work on fundamentals and have meetings before practice in spring training and go over base running, which is so lacking right now. If you watch a team run the bases, it's almost embarrassing the way these guys run the bases right now. And, we practice sliding in the proper way. And if I were my way, there would no way I would allow anyone to slide head first, because you're looking at stinting the disabled list by even attempting something that's stupid.
Yeah.
But we're fundamentally better sound. I know these guys are great athletes today, but I think that they ought to pay a little more attention to the little things. And that's what the one thing that I learned with the Dodger organization. And, of course, I had to play. I played 5 years of minor league baseball for the great Tommy Lasorda.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, Bill. When I signed, the first guy I met in professional baseball was Tommy Lasorda, and I said, God, this guy's really fun. He's making, you play baseball, you don't work baseball, is what he emphasized. And his energy was unbelievable. So I thought, everybody must be like Tommy Lasorda. It's been almost 60 years, and I'm still waiting for the second coming of Tommy Lasorda.
Yeah,
it is absolutely amazing. I never met, God bless him. I talk to Tommy, about once a month, you know, over the years, and he was like a second father to us all.
Yeah.
You know, he really was one of a kind, and I don't think that there could ever be another one. I mean, he's just, he was amazing, the energy that he exuded, and boy, did he hate to lose.
We spoke earlier, Tom, about Tommy, and people just know the Hollywood Tommy Lasorda, the baseball ambassador Tommy Lasorda, the Tommy who fights the Philly fanatic. But his right, yeah, his baseball acumen, his knowledge of baseball and how to play the game, is really overshadowed by stuff like that.
You know, that's a great call right there, Bill. Because, you know, remember in the 1988 World Series, I think it was 88, when the Dodgers played the Oakland A's, the Dodgers had no business winning that series.
Right.
But Tommy, from what I gathered, the information that I gathered, he put on 18 hit and runs during that series because he knew he couldn't outslug the Oakland A's, and everything seemed to be falling into a pattern for him, and everything went right for him. But that's how he outmanaged the Oakland team. And put a very unlikely candidate into the World Series World Championship, and you know, those are the kind of things that he did. And you know, he'd drag you out there in the morning if you were in a slump. If I couldn't hit a curveball, he'd throw me 100 curveballs one day early in the morning. You know, things like that that other guys, other people just don't do. And but you're right though, Bill. His acumen for baseball was extraordinary.
Yeah,
and
we don't like to talk about the 1988 season, Tom. Tom Pachorik with us tonight on Sports Talk
New York.
They beat
the Mets. Yeah,
that was the year that Socia took Doc Gooden over the right field wall at Old Shea Stadium and started the end of that. The Mets were favored to win it all that year. And Tommy and Kurt Gibson and the Bulldog Hershiser really took it to us. It was rough.
Well, it really must have been rough, but you know, that was something about Tommy. I remember Bob Costas made a statement that the Dodgers have no right to be in the World Series, and Tommy used that as a soundboard in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
They don't think you guys can play a lick.
Yeah,
and then and look what happened. It's amazing. That was one of the biggest upsets, I think, ever in baseball history.
And I want to go back to what you said earlier, Tom, about fundamentals. Keith Hernandez, who's a broadcaster for the Mets, is always stressing to the kids on the TV about fundamentals. He calls them fundies. And also, sliding head first is a big no-no to Keith Hernandez. You should not do it. So there you go with another great baseball guy talking about exactly what you were back then.
Well, I played with Keith, you know, in 85.
Right.
And
yeah.
Keith couldn't run a lick.
No.
But he was probably as good a first baseman as I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. He and Don Mattingly, to name another great New Yorker.
Right.
But you played behind Keith. It's amazing the jump he got on the ball and the plays he made at first base. Were absolutely incredible,
yeah.
And like you said, he was fundamentally very sound, good hitter. Did the little things right, move runners over, things like that, which you know just aren't emphasized now. And that is sometimes disturbing to me. You know, why don't you hit and run? Why don't you steal more bases? And they're opening everything up. You can only throw to first base what, two times before you have to. Before the
he's
got to be out the third time, you know, it just doesn't. I don't know, and the head first slide is my biggest bugaboo too.
Oh boy,
my grandson plays in the Angel organization. I tell him if he ever slides head first, I'm going to slap him across the head because it doesn't get you there any faster, and you're increasing the chance for injury.
You got to wear an oven mitt, Tom. You got to wear an oven mitt these days. Imagine that!
Oh yeah, yeah. Ovens, yeah, right.
Oh, geez.
We were working with batting gloves. I remember the first day that nobody ever wore batting gloves, and we were in Salt Lake City getting ready to open up, and it was snowing. So Bobby Valentine and Buckner and I went to Ace Hardware and got some gardening gloves to use in the snow.
Yeah.
We implemented things, you know.
Sure.
It was, and we felt like 5 years in the minor leagues, well, that's about right. You know, everybody else is doing it.
Yeah,
the
right.
Dodgers, and nowadays, these guys are mad when they have to spend a year and a half in the minor leagues.
Oh, right, yeah. We talked about the Dodgers, Tom. Let's talk about your days in Seattle. You really kind of hit your stride up there. Your time in Seattle was great. And the promos, I talked about that earlier, too. The promos that you did for the Mariners, they're legendary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's funny, though, Bill, because I was called up to the Mariners after being released twice by the Braves in 1978,
mm-hmm.
and Rupert Jones had an appendectomy, so I got called up. I was in AAA San Jose with the Mariners and got called up, and I was sitting on the bench for a month, and all of a sudden, here comes Rupert. He's going to play tomorrow, and I needed to I was in the lineup batting ninth and DHing against Mike Caldwell of Milwaukee.
Right.
Well, I said, Lord, I've got to do something different. I got to change everything I do. So why don't I do my Rod Carew stance, you know, where you point the bat back towards the catcher.
Yeah.
And get down real low. Well, Mike Caldwell threw me four pitches that night, Bill, and I hit all four of them. I hit went 4-for-4 with a game-winning home run, and the next day Rupert came back and they released another guy other than myself. So yeah. I was able to get 9 more years in the big leagues because of that one day in Seattle.
Well, he got to credit Rod Carew, right?
Yeah, I pointed the bat back towards it. I don't know why more people don't do it.
Yeah.
Or hit from a crouch, like Pete Rose, Rod Carew, Ricky Henderson, guys. Joe DiMaggio pointed the bat back towards the catcher.
Well,
Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly given some fine evidence for that, Tom. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. Those guys had tremendous success, and there you go, too.
And they didn't strike out either.
No. Yeah, so that was really groundbreaking. Tom Pachorek with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, with the White Sox, you were with that was the winning ugly with the Chicago White Sox. You were one of the veterans on that team. Some great talent, some great arms. But I've heard you speak about one of my all-time favorites that was on that club for a while, Jerry Kuzman.
Oh, my God, the Coozer.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite guys of all time. And you know, in 83, Coos was like, God, you know, he could do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you could start him, you could relieve him. He didn't care. He never had a sore arm either.
Nope.
And I'll tell you what, if you needed somebody knocked down, Coozer was the man for the job.
Oh, yeah.
He would separate the helmet from the head in a heartbeat, and I really think he enjoyed it.
I remember in 69, Tom, who was it? I think Fergie Jenkins. No, Bill Hands. It was Bill Hands threw one that Tommy Agee knocked him down. So the next inning, Kuzman hits Ron Santo right in the arm. And, oh, boy, was he mad. But that, as you say, that's Jerry Kuzman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was an amazing guy, and they traded him to Philly after 84, and we got Tom Seaver on our ball club, too, but it just didn't have the same mixture.
No, I know.
Sometimes, you know, we needed Coos. Of course, Seavey was great. Tom Seaver, one of the great guys of and a joy to be around. You know, a great good guy as well as a great pitcher, and you know he left us way too early.
Yeah, we think so, Tom. Yeah, it's a shame. But being the Mets, they let him go twice. You know, so
isn't that amazing?
There you go.
You know, I played in '85, Bill, with Doc Gooden.
Right,
and he was it was the best year I've ever seen anybody have in all the years of baseball. He was 24-4 with a 1.7 earned run average, 300 and some strikeouts.
Yeah.
And we lost to the Cardinals. They won 102 games. We only won 99, and there was no wild card. So we were packing up at Shea Stadium to go home, and Howard Johnson yells across the room. He says, "Hey, Doc, if you wouldn't have lost those four games, we'd have won this thing."
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, what a season that was, Tom. And as we said, you were on the Mets in 85. They won 99 games. The Cards win 102. Doc loses four games. If they would have won those, the Mets would have been in. That was pretty good by Hojo. But
one of the great lines, I repeat that as often as I can.
What a year, though, Tom. You're exactly right. What a season by Doc Gooden. And there's another shame right there.
Oh, my goodness. He had Hall of Fame written all over him.
Yeah.
He had two totally unhittable pitches. You know, when he was 19, Bill Gullickson was pitching for Montreal, and he knocked down Gary Carter for some reason. And Gary was putting his equipment on. I just happened to be sitting next to Carter. And Doc walked over. He was pitching that night. He walked over and said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of that."
Yeah.
And next inning, he separated Gullickson. He saw his big old butt up in the air and his helmet flying right between the ball and his head. And he couldn't go out and pitch anymore. But that's what happened back then. And a 19-year-old with having that baseball acumen to do something, to do the right thing at the time. Now you get a lawsuit.
These guys,
like
you throw one on the inside black, and these guys want to charge the mound, right?
Yes.
Oh
yeah,
man.
The game is evolved into it's good. There's a lot of really good players out there. But I don't know if it's being played, nowhere near the way we interpreted the game, the way the game should be played.
They either strike out or hit a home run.
Well, how about these dances that these guys do?
I
see a home run. They would have never got the first base if Nolan Ryan or Goose Gossage was pitching.
Yeah, I asked Darrell Evans about that a couple of weeks ago. Is that Darrell? You ever flipped a bat? You hit for over 400 home runs. You ever do a bat flip? What are you kidding? Yeah.
We'd want to sneak around the bases, so hopefully the guy would forget that it was you.
Yeah.
One time, Bill, I hit a old Comiskey Park. I had a bases loaded triple off Goose, three RBIs, and I'm standing at second base, and I'm not dancing or pumping my chest or anything. I ran in the clubhouse between after the inning was over. And I said, "When are we in New York? Because I know Goose is going to kill me."
Yeah.
And sure enough, the opportunity came, and my feet went straight up in the air. And I asked him, "Are we even?" He said, "Nah, we're never even."
No, guys like the Goose didn't forget, right, Tom?
Oh, no. It was one week, we were going to New York. I said, "Oh, I better accept what's my thing." But that's what guys that you guys don't realize today.
Not the same. Now, Tom, tell us about Wimpy. How did you get the famous nickname Wimpy?
Well, it was given from God, I think.
Yeah.
Actually, Lasorda had this relationship with his players where we'd all go out to eat and together as a team. And I thought it was a great idea. And so the very first day we went out there, Valentine and Garvey and Buckner and all those guys ordered steak. But I had never really eaten much steak in my life, so I ordered a double or triple cheeseburger. And poof, then I became Wimpy from the Popeye comic strip.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a good one. And Lasorda gave you that?
Yeah, it's only been 58 years, Bill. I'm sure I'm getting rid of that sucker.
The Hawk used to call you that a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. The Hawkaroo.
Oh, man. Well,
yeah, it was a lot of fun, too. We had baseball was really fun.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if the money aspect of the whole thing isn't kind of deteriorating from the game, because you look at some of these contracts that these guys got, and you say, my goodness, it's I don't begrudge them for taking it, naturally.
No.
But I'm thinking, what about that $10,000 I made my rookie year with the Dodgers?
Yeah.
I had to go teach school and then go to winter ball.
And you were happy with it.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was great. And to make it to the big leagues, I had to play 5 years in the minor leagues, 3 years in AAA, two in Spokane and one in Albuquerque, where I had to hit over 20 homers, drive in 100 runs, and hit 300. And I thought that was normal.
Yeah, imagine that. Well, Tom Pachorek, it's been a pleasure. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us here in New York. I wish you a happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you and the family, and I thank you once again, Tom. We'll have you back.
Oh, please do, Bill. I really enjoyed it, and you are great. I'll tell you, you know your stuff.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. I try.
And you have a great Christmas. My best to you and your family.
All right. That's Tom Pachorek, ladies and gentlemen. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk New York. I would like to thank my wonderful guests, Eric Vickery and Tom Pachorek, my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you guys for joining us. I'll see you next on Sunday, December 28th. More Sports Talk New York then. We'll welcome in former Met Mark Canha. And coming back for Christmas this year, Zuzu Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life. Carolyn Grimes herself will join us. So, till then, be safe, be well, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa. This is Bill Donahue, and I'm wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.